This week, we hear from Stephen L. Harrison. What absurd questions do non-Masons ask Masons? Steve tells us his three most experienced queries. Then, we'll get insight into the man who inspired the Masonic Legacy Society. Who is John E. Fetzer? Was he a Mason? And what was his driving force throughout his life? Finally, we'll tackle Part 2, Chapter 3 of Ancient and Modern Initiation by Max Hindell, a chapter on the temptation. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 488. I want to thank the producers, fellows contributors, and our legacy partners for allowing us to bring you Masonic education week after week, month after month, year after year, all the way back since 2011. Almost 10 years of Masonic education. If you want to learn more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show at the top, and you can find out just how you can do that. We have both ways. You can go through Patreon or through PayPal monthly subscription contribution model. And they are both the same. One is at the contributor level. You get your name on the site. The second is your name on the site as well as a personalized thank you card from me. And the producer level is both of those, plus I'll send you a producer's pin. Now, our legacy partner is very special. Not only do you get those, the legacy partner is our top tier designed to allow the WCY podcast and WCY media the ability to make large changes that would otherwise take years to fund. And legacy partners get all of those other perks as the producer tier, but will be able to pick an episode topic, select articles for inclusion, dependent on copyright and permissions and such, and also give direction once a year in an episode. So we'll actually work together to create your dream episode on a yearly basis. And again, those same tiers are available through PayPal. It looks like the next gig I have coming up is going to be MasonicCon Ezekiel Bates, where there is a limited in-person engagement. More to come on that when I know a little bit more, but that is still scheduled for May 1st, 2021. Now, MasonicCon Ezekiel Bates was initially scheduled over a year ago, and of course, when the pandemic hit, they had to push back, and they pushed back until later that summer, and still was not able to happen, so they pushed it back until now. So it took a whole year off, basically. So we are excited to get back to work a little bit there. And if you scored a ticket and you will be there in a limited fashion, then look forward to seeing you. If not, then again, I don't know all the details, but there may be a chance of virtual attendance. I'm not entirely sure yet, but when I know, you'll know. But speaking of the pandemic, it is nice to see that a lot of people are out there getting vaccines. The world is starting to get back to some semblance of normal. In limited cases, the fact that you can now meet with your vaccinized friends and family is really exciting without masks, and you can actually hang out. That is really cool. Of course, you want to definitely, anytime I talk about, you know, the pandemic and things that are going on in the world, these are things, of course, that I've heard, but don't take my word for it. You know, always check your local ordinances and the CDC's website for their best recommendations if you're curious. But it is nice to see our brothers getting back to work and candidates getting degrees and fellowship happening once more in a little bit more of a controlled and responsible way. Now, the first piece for this week, I want to start it off with something kind of fun that was published on the Midnight Freemasons blog called Three Questions from Non-Masons by Midnight Freemason contributor Brother Stephen L. Harrison, FMLR, 33rd degree. A few months ago, I traveled to St. Louis to take part, social distancing protocol observed, in making a video of the Scottish Rite Southern Jurisdiction degrees. While there, I received a phone call from someone back home. She wanted to discuss a project we were working on together. Then, just to make conversation, she asked what I was up to that day. I told her I was out of town with a group, filming the degrees. She let out a gasp so loud it almost sucked the phone out of my hand. "Isn't that secret?" "I've been a Freemason for 22 years now, and her question brought to my mind the things I have been most often asked by non-Masons. In my experience, yours of course may differ, there are three main areas of concern. The secrets. We've all heard it 1,000 times. We are not a secret organization, we're an organization with secrets. Try convincing someone outside the fraternity we're not all about secrets. It was the first thing that caller thought to ask, and she isn't alone. Our closed doors conjure up all kinds of speculation about our activities and motives. I have even known brothers who joined just for the purpose of learning those secrets. Not too long ago, my own lodge had one such brother. I'll give him credit. He went through the line and became master, all the time wondering, when do the really juicy secrets kick in? For him, they never did. He came to the installation of the master who succeeded him and left, apparently disappointed, never to be seen again. The secrets. They want to know about those mysterious secrets. The meetings. The second question I get is, just what do you do in those meetings? It just follows. If we have all those secrets, we must be up to something strange and mysterious, even dark and evil in our meetings. I can reach into my own experience for this. When I met with my dad to present him his 50-year jewel, I was not yet a Freemason. His lodge conducted its entire meeting before letting me in to make the presentation. Even having been a demolay, I couldn't help but wonder just what was going on in there. It's sometimes hard to conceive people were not making sacrifices, levitating the altar to reveal a picture of Satan, or having orgies. No, guys, we're not doing any of that, but we can sure plan a good bean dinner. That degree. The other thing I am most often asked, are you a 33rd degree? That seems to be the only level of quote-unquote rank people outside the fraternity know or care about. I have never once been asked if I am worshipful, a right worshipful, most worshipful, master knight, commander 32nd, degree, grand master, or anything else. Well, there is poobah. I've been asked about that. We really should think about making that an official title. Apparently to outsiders it would rank right up there with 33rd degree. That pretty much covers the big three of questions I'm most often asked. I suppose I should give an honorable mention to some of the hats we wear. My wife Carolyn calls my commander's chapeau a pirate hat, and when I'm headed for the Scottish Rite meeting, she always asks if I have remembered my bellhop cap. And let's not forget that shrine fez, the poster child of all the funky Masonic caps. I actually kind of like getting questions like these, and I suppose my favorite is the question about the 33rd degree. Now that I am one, my standard response is, yes, I am a 33rd degree Mason, which means I know all the secrets. Mwahahaha. Stephen L. Harrison. Brother Stephen L. Harrison, of course, is past master of Liberty Lodge, number 31 in Liberty, Missouri, as well as a slew of other Masonic titles, 33rd degree, all that good stuff, and a fellow of Missouri Lodge of Research, and a regular contributor here at the Midnight Freemasons, as well as a regular contributor on this podcast as the Masonic Minute. That is very popular, and people love those segments. So our thanks to Brother Stephen L. Harrison for his continued work in the fraternity and his article, and for loosening it up this week with something fun. The next piece I would love to read for you, actually, is an excerpt from the most recent issue of the Fraternal Review, Southern California Research Lodge's monthly publication. Well, I shouldn't say monthly. They publish 10 months a year. The most recent issue that is out is, of course, on the Masonic Legacy Society. Now, I have mentioned this in the past. It's a project that I'm intimately involved with, and I was actually lucky enough to be the guest editor for the March 2021, Volume 62, Number 2 issue. And in this issue, we really tried to lay out some of the greatest things about the Masonic Legacy Society and exactly what it is. The contents are wonderful this month. I'm not being biased. I really did go and get some great content from some great Masons. Really stuff that is truly curated here. We've got articles and a Q&A from Akram Elias. We have from Baruti Kimmet Sisuvong. We have a bit of the Esoterica as a piece of writing that comes directly from Brother John Fetzer. And, of course, an article by Chuck Dunning as well called The Heart of Our Mysteries. Now, a moment ago, I just mentioned this name, John E. Fetzer. Well, what exactly is that? Well, on our website for Masonic Legacy Society, you will find that if you click the About tab, you'll see that we are inspired by the life of John E. Fetzer. And so this is really an interesting topic. Who is John E. Fetzer, and why would a Masonic Legacy Society, a Masonic organization, take their inspiration from this man? And we realized that that is part of a great question that a lot of people have when it comes to this particular individual. So we wanted to make clear who John E. Fetzer was, and so I asked Brother Tom Beaver, who actually lived with John E. Fetzer for the last 10 years of his life, and who was instrumental in putting together his biography and all of these other things, and who worked incredibly hard and was just such a wealth of knowledge and inspiration to us, Brother Tom Beaver, to assist us in putting together a short biography of John E. Fetzer's spiritual journey in a nutshell. And so I'd love to read this for you right now. So consider this maybe a throwback to famous Freemasons, but maybe somebody you didn't even know. So here we go. Masonic Pioneer, John E. Fetzer's Spiritual Journey in a Nutshell, by Tom Beaver. John E. Fetzer, 1901 to 1991, was an internationally respected businessman, a Major League Baseball owner, awarded the Baseball Commissioner's Executive Award for Excellence in Baseball in 1984. In the mid-1980s, he was named by Forbes as one of America's wealthiest 400 persons. In the 80s, John sold his business interests and put all his resources into the Fetzer Institute, founded by John to do cutting-edge scientific research into the intersection of science and spirituality. John's mother, Della, was a seeker herself. She was religious, but as John remembers it, she wasn't dogmatic about it. Born a Mennonite, she practiced the Methodist faith and its camp revivalism when John was a boy. John was a religious boy. His mother thought he'd be a preacher. When John was a teen, Della converted to Seventh-day Adventism. By 1930, she'd left Adventism, and that year she went to a fortune teller. Soon after, she settled in for the rest of her life in the Baptist church. Like his mother, as a teen, John was a follower of Seventh-day Adventism, and in the mid-1920s, he attended and graduated from It's Emmanuel Missionary College in Berrien Springs, Michigan. By 1928, John had left the Adventist Church because of its quote-unquote fundamentalist tendencies. During these years, John read the writings of an experimental physicist and the actual inventor of radio, Nikola Tesla, which he later called, quote-unquote, our Bible. Many of Tesla's words and interviews in the early years of the 20th century were printed in magazines that John had read. These interviews included personal anecdotes by Tesla of his seemingly psychic abilities. They were interpreted as psychic by Henry Ford, who attempted to partner with Tesla in the parapsychological research effort. In 1986, Fetzer said about himself in this period, quote, "As I experimented and studied more of Tesla's work, I recognized that there are energy waveforms in the physical world, and I began to wonder if there were other more subtle waveforms that we can't see with our eyes," end quote. And so Tesla led Fetzer to start thinking about a connection between science and metaphysics, and a connection that took on more and more importance to Fetzer over time. John's interest in spiritualism may have been triggered by the loss of his first love in the World War I era Spanish flu epidemic, and John consequently contacting her through a medium. Spiritualism flourished in the United States of America during and after World War I, with people flocking to its visionary mediums, searching for lost loved ones due to war and the flu epidemic. By 1934, he had visited Camp Chesterfield, an Indiana spiritualist camp, north of Indianapolis and just 80 miles south of Decatur, Indiana, where John was born. He consulted with the mediums numerous times there over the next 30-plus years. John's interest in spiritualism carried through the mid-1970s, when he twice made contact with his deceased mother, who died in 1958, and father, not only with Chesterfield mediums, but also during personal seance sessions in London with Anna Twigg, a world-famous medium who is known for solving the famous Bishop Pike case, and whose client book included Churchill, FDR, and De Gaulle. John became a master mason and joined the Ancient Acceptance Scottish Rite in 1934, and stayed active. In 1969, he reached the pinnacle of the Ancient Acceptance Scottish Rite, the 33rd degree. In 1938, John went to an astrologer in Washington, D.C., quote, "Everyone on the hill was seeing her," end quote, John said. The astrologer had predicted an improbable and quick victory for John in the, quote-unquote, 590 case. John's pursuit of 24-hour licenses for smaller radio stations, which had been dragging on in the halls of Washington at that time for 5 years. This prediction came true, and John said that this occurrence made him take serious notice of parapsychology. In 1944 and 45, as assistant director of censorship for the broadcasting, John saw reports of Nazi Foo Fighters, that is, UFOs, interfering with Allied planes in their bombing runs over Germany. This triggered a lifelong interest in UFOs for John. In 1974, he gave a speech at the Kalamazoo Outlook Club entitled "The Flying Saucer Hoax," a speech laying out his belief in the phenomena. And in 1977, he arranged to meet with the former head of the 1950s and 60s Project Blue Book, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who by that time was saying publicly that the project had been a cover-up and that UFOs were real. Later, a multi-volume book series published from the 1920s through the 1950s told of the purportedly autobiographical story about the journey to Tibet by a self-professed mining engineer, Baird Spaulding, to meet and associate with Tibetan and Theosophical masters there. This work was thoroughly studied by John. He underlines almost every word of every volume because of the author's supposed engineering background and the work's scientific-like content. Masters of the Far East is extensively quoted in John's 1973 preamble to the Fetzer Foundation. John owned and read the multi-volume works of Alice Bailey as well. Theosophy's strong influence can be seen in John's 1967 speech and writing entitled "This I Believe," plus his 1973 preamble to the Fetzer Foundation, as well as his 1971 America's Agony. In each of these writings, the theosophical notion of a central spiritual sun is preeminent. In 1967, John wrote and gave a speech entitled "This I Believe," which showed theosophical and Masonic influences as well as Tesla's influence regarding spirit as energy in a scientific-like context. Quote, "The physical man is an intricate electronic device with a set of transistor-like cells built in from head to toe. Each and every one of them vibrates with cosmic energy and is a permanently adjusted miniature receiver of electronic waveforms from the central source. The universal mind, the subconscious mind of man, is in complete attunement with and has every attribute of the universal mind at all times. The conscious mind is your center of control. The single most important event in the life of the individual is to develop an awareness of this relationship between the two minds. Look within to see God's presence." End quote. In 1969, John received the National Association of Broadcasters Distinguished Service Award, the broadcast industry's highest award. By 1973, John had led the Fetzer Board to pass a resolution stating the Fetzer Foundation would support research in parapsychology. In 1974, John submitted to an interview with Psychic Magazine in their quote-unquote business issue. In the interview, John talked about using his intuition, his inner voice, to make business decisions. Quote, "Success is a thing I've always taken for granted, and I should suspect it's because I do trust intuition to the point that I don't make enough wrong decisions to undermine a successful rhythm," end quote. John was initiated into Transcendental Meditation in 1974 and 75, as were several of the Detroit Tigers, including Hall of Famer Bill Freehan, 1968 World Series MVP Mickey Lawlick, and manager Ralph Houk. John personally met with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi in 1975, who urged John to take TM into the inner circles of Washington, D.C. John was regularly meditating at least as early as 1974. In 1975, John was introduced to A Course in Miracles, the philosophy of non-dualism, that the material world doesn't really exist or is a dream, etc. John studied this deeply for the next 6 years, and its philosophy became a prominent part of his worldview for the rest of his life. In the latter 1970s, John was taken through the Silva Mind Control course, popular in the United States at the time, and which involved psychic development and remote viewing as well as spiritual healing. In a taped interview in 1982 for a possible biography, John detailed his philosophy of a group of people reincarnating together again and again, including John, to try to accomplish a spiritual goal in the world. On a spring 1983 trip to Egypt, Jim Gordon, Fetzer's spiritual advisor, met John Roger, head of the MSIA, which teaches Surat Shabad Yoga. Originally an ancient northern Indian and Persian meditation practice involving sound and light, Jim was initiated into the practice, and by early 1986, John was also initiated into it. John was dedicated to this meditation practice for the rest of his life. So there you have some really interesting information on John E. Fetzer, who of course was a Mason and a Scottish Rite Mason who was very active, but kept a lot of his spiritualist and esoteric kind of thoughts to himself, with the exception of, you know, his really inner circle. If you'd like to know more about John E. Fetzer, you can pick up the book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, by Brian C. Wilson. It's published by Wayne State University Press, and it's an illustrated edition. It's a hardcover book, and if you find that, you can definitely pick it up. I really recommend the book if you want to learn more about John Fetzer. What an incredible individual he was. And I think Brother Tom Beaver was one of the likely most cited resources within this entire book. Brian Wilson typed it, and I'm sure Tom Beaver is the words behind it. So just a million thanks to Brother Tom Beaver for what he's done here. And for Brian C. Wilson, who put the book together, it's really fantastic. But also a big thanks goes out to the Southern California Research Lodge, Fraternal Review Magazine, who allowed us to put together this issue and get this word out. If you're interested in the Masonic Legacy Society and what it entails, please head on over to MasonicLegacySociety2026.com for more information. You can definitely download the guide and the document, which are totally free. I just ask for your email address and some of your personal information, and once you click submit, it's automatically emailed to you. And just a note, it will end up in your promotions folder, most likely, if you use Gmail, and it might go into your spam, so you want to make sure you check that before you reach out. In that particular issue, though, the Masonic Legacy Society's issue from the Fraternal Review, head on over to theresearchlodge.com. To pick up your subscription, you can buy individual issues, you can subscribe, you can even get a lodge subscription, which comes with 3 issues, so that 3 issues get sent to you, and you can give those to your members. Let's continue our journey into Ancient and Modern Initiation by Max Heindel, or Hindle. In previous episodes, once we're all done, we'll kind of put them all together in kind of a block so that you can listen to each episode of the WCY podcast as we listen to each segment. However, this week we're moving on to Part 2, Chapter 3. Now, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about baptism in Chapter 2, in Part 2, and that was fascinating. This week, we're moving on to Chapter 3, after taking a short break last week. This is Chapter 3, The Temptation. Let's dive in and see what Max Heindel has to say about the temptation. We often hear about devout Christians complain of their periods of depression. At times, they are almost in the seventh heaven of spiritual exaltation. They all but see the face of Christ and feel as if He were guiding their every step. Then, without any warning and without any cause, that they can discover, the clouds gather, the Savior hides his face, and the world grows black for a period. They cannot work, they cannot pray. The world has no attraction, and the gate of heaven seems shut against them, with the result that life appears worthless so long as this spiritual expression lasts. The reason is, of course, that these people live in their emotions, and under the immutable law of alternation, the pendulum is bound to swing as far to one side of the neutral point as it has swung to the other. The brighter the light, the deeper the shadow, and the greater the exaltation, the deeper the depression of spirit which follows it. Only those who, by cold reason, restrain their emotions, escape periods of depression, but they never taste the heavenly bliss of exaltation either. And it is this emotional outpouring of himself which furnished the Christian mystic with the dynamic energy to protect himself into the invisible worlds, where he becomes one with the spiritual ideal which has beckoned him on and awakened in his soul the power to rise to it, as the sun built the eye wherewith we perceive it. The nestling takes many a tumble here, it learns to use its wings with assurance, and the aspirant upon the path of Christian mysticism may soar to the very throne of God times out of number, and then fall to the lowest pit of hell's despair. But sometime he will overcome the world, defy the law of alternation, and rise by the power of spirit to the Father of spirits, free from the toils of emotion, filled with the peace that passeth understanding. But that is the end attained only after Golgotha and the mystic baptism, the latter of which we discussed in the preceding chapter. Moreover, it is only the beginning of the active career of the Christian mystic, in which he becomes thoroughly saturated with the tremendous fact of the unity of all life, and imbued with a fellow feeling for all creatures to such an extent that henceforth he can not only enunciate, but practice the tenets of the Sermon on the Mount. Did the spiritual experiences of the Christian mystic take him no further, it would still be the most wonderful adventure in the world, and the magnitude of the event beyond words, the consequences only dimly imaginable. Most students of the higher philosophies believe in the brotherhood of man from the mental conviction that we have all emanated from the same source, as rays emanate from the sun. But there is an abyss of inconceivable depth and width between this cold intellectual conception and the baptismal saturation of the Christian mystic, who feels it is at his heart and in every fiber of his being, with such an intensity that it is actually painful to him. It fills him with such a yearning, aching love, as that expressed in the words of Christ. Quote, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings," end quote. A brooding, yearning, and achingly protective love, which asks nothing for self save only the privilege to nurture, to shield, and to cherish. We even faint resemblance to such a universal fellow feeling abroad among humanity in this dark day. What a paradise earth would be, instead of every man's hand being against his brother to slay with the sword, with rivalry and competition, or to destroy his morals and degrade him by prison stripes, or industrial bondage under the whiplash of necessity. We should have neither warriors nor prisoners, but a happy, contented world, living in peace and harmony, learning all the lessons which our Father in heaven aims to teach us in this material condition, and all the misery in the world may be accounted for by the fact that if we believe in the Bible at all, we believe with our head and not with our heart. When we came up through the waters of baptism, the Atlantean flood, into the rainbow age of alternating seasons, we became prey to the changing emotions which whirl us hither, and you upon the season of life. The cold faith restrained by reason, entertained by the majority of professing Christians, may given them a need of patience and mental valance, which bears them up under the trials of life. But when the majority get the living faith of Christian mystic, which laughs at reason because it is heartfelt, then the age of alternation will be past, the rainbow will fall with the clouds and the air which now composes the atmosphere, and there will be a new heaven of pure ether which we shall receive the baptism of spirit, and, quote, "there shall be peace," end quote, Jerusalem. We are still in the rainbow age and subject to its low. so we may realize, as the baptism of the Christian mystic occurs at a time of spiritual exaltation, it must necessarily be followed by a reaction. The tremendous magnitude of the revelation overpowers him. He cannot realize it or contain it in his fleshy vehicle. So he flees the haunts of men and betakes himself to the solitude allegorically represented as desert. So rapt is he in his sublime discovery that for the time being in his ecstasy he loses the loom of life upon which the bodies of all that live are woven. From the least to the greatest, the mouse and the man, the hunter and his prey, the warrior and his victim. But to him they are not separate and apart, for he also beholds the one divine thread of golden light, life light, which runs through all and doth all unite. Nay, more, he hears in each the flaming keynote sounding its aspirations and voicing its hopes and fears, and he perceives this composite color sound as the world anthem of God made flesh. This is at first entirely beyond his comprehension. The tremendous magnitude of the discovery hides it from him, and he cannot conceive what it is that he sees and feels. For there is no words to describe it, and no concept can cover it. But by degrees it draws upon him that he is at the very fountain of life, beholding, nay, more feeling, its ever pulse beat. And with this comprehension he reaches the climax of his ecstasy. So rapt has the Christian mystic been in his beautiful adventure that bodily wants have been completely forgotten till the ecstasy has passed, and it is therefore only natural that the feeling of hunger should be in his first conscious want upon him return to the normal state of consciousness, and also naturally comes the voice of temptation, quote-unquote, command that these stones be made bread. Few passages of the sacred scriptures are darker than the opening verses of the Gospel of St. John, quote-unquote, in the beginning was the Word, and without it was not anything made that was made. A slight study of the science of sound soon makes us familiar with the fact that sound is vibration, and that different sounds will mold sand or other light materials into figures of varying form. The Christian mystic may be entirely ignorant of this fact from the scientific point of view, but he has learned at the fountain of life to sing the song of being, which cradles into existence whatever such a master musician desires. There is one basic key for the indigestible mineral stone, but a modification will turn it to gold wherewith to purchase the means of sustenance, and another keynote peculiar to the vegetable kingdom will turn it into food, a fact known to all advanced occultists who practice incantations legitimately for spiritual purposes, but never for material profit. But the Christian mystic, who has just emerged from the baptism in the fountain of life, immediately shrinks in horror at the suggestion of using his newly discovered power for a selfish purpose. It was the very soul quality of unselfishness that led him to the waters of consecration in the fountain of life, and sooner would he sacrifice all, even life itself, than use this newfound power to spare himself a pang of pain. Did he not see also the woe of the world, and does he not feel it in his great health with such an intensity that the hunger at once disappears and is forgotten? He may, will, and does use this wonderful power to freely feed the thousands that gather to hear him, but never for selfish purposes, else he would upset the equilibrium of the world. The Christian mystic does not reason this out, however. As often stated, he has not reason, but he has a much safer guide in the interior voice which always speaks to him in moments when a decision must be made. Quote unquote, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth from God. Another mystery, there is not need to partake of earthly bread for one who has access to the fountain of life. The more our thoughts are centered in God, the less we shall care for the so-called pleasure of the table. And by feeding our gross body sparingly on selected simple foods, we shall obtain an illumination of spirit, impossible to one who indulges in an excessive diet of coarse foods which nourish the lower nature. Some of the saints have used fasting and castigation as a means of soul growth, but that is a mistaken method for reasons given in an article on Fasting for Soul's Growth published in December of 1915, number of Rays from the Rose Cross. The elder brothers of humanity who understand the law and live accordingly use food only at intervals measured by years. The word of God is to them a quote-unquote living bread. So it becomes also to the Christian mystic, and the temptation, instead of working its downfall, has led him to greater heights. So this week we've got three questions for our Craftsman Plus. Now normally I go ahead and I give these questions after each article. This week I'm going to give you all of them at the end. Your first prompt that will be in the user group is related to Steve's article. And I want to know, what's the weirdest question you've received from a non-Mason about the craft? My second question is, for those of you who are familiar with the idea of a central sun, which came out of John E. Fetzer's short biographical piece that I read, what are your thoughts about such a concept? I'll provide a link inside the writing prompt in the Facebook group. Now, the third question I hope you find interesting, because what I would love to do is to ask you about your feelings regarding the latter portion of this chapter 3 in part 2, where he talks about the idea of abstaining from eating, you know, extravagant and excessive amounts of food and these kinds of things. Fasting has this really interesting history in many religions and mythologies and practices, you know, philosophical and otherwise, throughout the world and through all time, really. My question for you is, given what Heindel has written here talking about eating more simple foods, and then some of the science that talks about minimalist eaters actually get more things done in a day, are more focused, and live longer, is there a science that backs up these mystic ideas about diet and things of that nature? I look forward to reading and commenting on your responses in the Facebook group, and I hope you guys all really enjoyed this week's episode and found, you know, some laughs and something that maybe intrigued you that you'll dive deeper into something else. Again, before we close out this week, I want to thank once more our producers, fellows, contributors, and our legacy partners for making this show possible. To learn more, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Check out all of the things that we have available on the website. We have our shop where you can pick up the producer's pin. You can get the new copy of The Master's Word, a short treatise on the Word, the Light, and the Self, which I'll autograph and send out to you. But if you're not into that, then you can certainly pick it up on Amazon and Kindle, which is available as well. We also have How to Charter a Lodge, a no-nonsense, unsanctioned guide. You're out there today, you're wondering, things are getting back on track in Masonry. Maybe you're going back to Lodge and you've got some ideas to revitalize things. This is a great book to check out because it allows you to figure out how to start from scratch if you need to. It's the perfect time to really get into it. And we've got some awesome insights by some wonderful brothers inside the book as well. Guys like Grandmaster Bob Davis. And then, of course, it's Business Time, which is also available. A time-tested book that people love. And we continue to sell all the time. It's a great pleasure to write with Brother John Ruark, and I hope you enjoy that as well. And we also have a limited amount of MasonicCon Chicago gear that was left over that we had made extra to be able to raise funds. So if you're interested in any of the MasonicCon Chicago gear that was given to our executive pass holders, check it out. Lastly, I'll invite you to check out, there's a tab for Our Friends, which has the Great Books program and, of course, Amity. And then we also have our other projects. So all of those things and whatever we talked about in the show will be in the show notes. Again, thank you all so much, and we'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.